You're listening to Don't Blink, the Doctor Who podcast on Golden Spiral Media. I'm David Ward, and joining me is my co-host Wayne Henderson. So don't blink, don't even blink.
Welcome back to Don't Blink. I'm David.
And no lying, I'm at Wayne Henderson.
And in this show, we're discussing Doctor Who Season 10, Episode 8, The Lie of the Land. Interesting title. I was immediately wondering how that was going to tie into the storyline, and it beautifully done. I got to say, I'm excited to talk to you about this and hear what our listeners think as well, because what a story.
Yes, and we have a lot of listener feedback, as always, and a lot of different opinions, David. It's going to be interesting to parse this out tonight.
Yeah, so what's your host rating? How did you rate this out of 10?
I really enjoyed watching this episode. And although I did enjoy the episode and thinking that it warrants a 9 out of 10 cups of coffee with mom, I am willing to listen to differing opinions and reserve the right to maybe adjust my ranking accordingly at the end of the episode, depending on what holes are burst in my bubble. How about you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty similar. I gave it 8 out of 10, surprisingly mobile pyramids. But I'm not going into this conversation trying to move the dial for you, Wayne, but I may be moved by some of our listener feedback, because I know that the responses to this have been all across the dial.
And you never know, by the end of this, we could both be giving it a 10. Who knows?
Who knows indeed, yeah. Well, it's been quite a week. We're doing some bumps for the commercials for Don't Blink, that we're going to start to cross promote our shows with some of the other shows that are on Golden Spiral Media. And I found myself a couple of days ago doing some Tom Baker impersonations, which I thought would be a good idea, and I don't think actually was. But I spent a great deal of time wandering around the house pretending to be Tom Baker.
Well,
Golden Spiral Media.
In the end, there's nothing wrong with that. You just go ahead and pretend to be Tom Baker all you want, David.
Well, then I realized that I had the very strange thought that that's how Tom Baker spends his time when he is in the house on his own as well.
He may want his own show on Golden Spiral Media. We'll see. But yeah, in coming episodes in the future, we will be sharing promos for some of the other shows on the network as they start to filter in. All the different hosts are working on them as we speak. So stay tuned, as they say.
Yeah, we have some very, very talented folks on the network. So we do encourage you to listen to the other shows also. So one thing that I saw on the show notes, Wayne, that you picked up straight away, which I completely missed, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, I've talked about that in past episodes, but this one, especially the first portion of the episode, it really had some elements that I thought were a great homage to Philip K. Dick's The Man in the High Castle, with having an alternate history and having some of the people knowing that it's a fake history and trying to rebel against it and break out of it. I don't know if it's just me, because I'm such a huge Philip K. Dick fan and have been since high school. Maybe I'm way off base, but that's just how it struck me. They had the space monks instead of the Nazis, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great catch. In fact, the memory police, when you have the kind of the chief of the memory police, and she's got the uniform on, it was really a very stylized sort of Nazi uniform, I thought, almost. So they were definitely going there. It was interesting. I thought that this was going to be a simulation episode, and it was and it wasn't. It went a different way, and so I'm expecting the simulation aspect to come back. There was too much played into that for it to just kind of go away, with the idea of all of that predictive modeling that they had of the different events that would occur. So, but it was, I love the memory, the alternate history. It's always good. All of those kinds of narratives are so interesting. The what ifs.
And it appeared visually to be fantastic. So I'm wondering if they spent half of their visual effects budget for the whole season on this episode.
Yeah, you have that wonderful, weird opening shot of the monk kind of looking into camera, and it's like a bizarre sort of psychedelic explosion of light coming out of the face, and then you see the monk with the sort of influencing human evolution, which is one of those, it's almost an in-joke in Doctor Who, the amount of episodes they've had where one kind of species or other has claimed to have influenced the evolution of humanity. I think there's something like a half dozen species at this point that could make that claim.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. All the different doctors, just not even counting the other aliens. Human history is very fluid.
Yes, indeed. And we're seeing real elements of the silence here as well, I think. When you see, you know, where the monks are on the, they're in the moon landing, they're sort of constantly everywhere throughout human history. It's really the mirror image or the negative image of the silence who are everywhere throughout human evolution, and we don't remember them. Now we've got the monks who weren't there, but we think we do.
Oh, you're blowing my mind. Yeah, that's a great point. And which one is more dangerous? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and they're just so creepy. They felt to me like the kind of what they were trying to achieve with the mummy on the Orient Express, but it's just a little bit nastier. And I didn't find these creatures unnerving at all in the other episodes that they were in, but in this one, I really did. And they're actually not in it very much, which I think made them a little bit more frightening as well somehow. They were just sort of a presence that you'd see through statues, but you wouldn't actually encounter them, which as they reveal at the end of the episode why that is, of course. But it just kind of turns the screw a little bit psychologically.
And kind of fun how the space monks have their headquarters pyramid right there in downtown London, right?
That's where I put it. It's easy.
I mean, when you, in the past, since they have rewritten history, when you were in London, did you ever come across it?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, they've really affected your memory. Okay.
That's right.
We got that going for us.
And I love the statues. I mean, it's straight out of the Master's Conquest of the Earth that we saw a few years ago when John Sims' Master comes back and the first thing he does is put statues up. This really did again feel like a Russell T. Davis episode. Felt like Turn Left. Felt like the Last of the Time Lords. And I think, great, this is what Doctor Who should be. Really very tense as well. This kind of something about it. This kind of the setup or storyline really gets under my skin. These kind of like dystopian sort of nightmarescapes.
Yes, so well done. And a few minor plot holes withstanding, it was just a strong, strong episode, and I highly recommend everybody see it. If you haven't already and you're, for whatever reason, just listening to the podcast episode discussion, watch this episode, pause the podcast, then come back and listen to the rest of us. And we learned a little tidbit that Nardal kind of has a little nickname, Nardi.
Nardi, yes. I know in the past you've not been the biggest fan of Nardal. Did this episode move that either way for you, or?
Yeah. I've kind of been a fan. It just took a while to figure out what his role was. This second half of the season, he's really grown on me, and I will be sad if he's not back next year. I think it's interesting that he reminded us that he recovered from that biochemical leak in about 6 weeks. Which is a short period of time because apparently he's not very much human or human at all. So he gave us that little reminder. He's not just some short, comedic, bald human that's hanging around with the doctor. He's from another place.
Yeah, and that works really well in the dynamic, for me at least, with the three of them, because what it lets you do is it keeps Bill at arm's length in terms of her kind of wonder at what the doctor's doing, and her, she loves him and respects him, but also there's a distance. He's so unknowable to her. The normal trajectory would be she would slowly start to become more sophisticated about space and time travel, just because the plots need them to that to happen.
Right.
Nardal is taking that role, so it keeps her at that level of naivety, which really works. It works for her character, and it works for the scripts too, because you see that moment where she encounters the doctor and she's got the gun. She just doesn't know if she can trust him. And the Nardal character is helping that to happen. He's doing the legwork and making the plot move along when the doctor can't, and doing the sci-fi spacey stuff. Captain Jack did the same thing actually as well. He accomplished the same thing in the first couple of Doctor Who series when it came back. Yeah.
And I know it's Bill that really had a problem with Nardal at the beginning, or Nardal had a problem with Bill. But it seems like they've really gelled together as well. They've finally become more of a cohesive unit, even though the big shenanigans in this episode will cause Bill to worry just a little bit how much she can trust everybody. But be that as it may, the Doctor has quite a sophisticated broadcast television studio offshore in a, you know, it's all dingy on the outside of that prison ship, of course, because that's what they do. But then you get inside and wow, it's all bright and sparkly and some more great vision work in there as far as how it was directed and weird angles and fisheye lens and the Doctor's just broadcasting a message around the world.
Yeah, it's really, it's so interesting. Also this setup, which is why I guess an 8 for me and not a 9, because they didn't follow through with this, but the idea that he is the voice of the propaganda machine for this alien invasion sort of is extraordinary. And it was, again, it was unsettling, that white room that he's in, really almost reminded me of the, and I keep talking about this, but the Valiant ship that the Master's on when he's, you know, like flying above the surface of the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
But again, it didn't bother me. It didn't feel derivative. It was just like, oh, we're back doing the things that I really, really liked when they did before.
Exactly.
Terrific.
Now, did you think, or was it just me, that wasn't the Doctor wearing a very different sport coat this week, and it seemed like it was a little bit tattered? Are we supposed to just glean from that it's because he's been in this prison ship all this time, or why is he choosing this look at this time?
Okay, so that's his morning coat. That's what he wears when he goes. I know far too much about this stuff.
That's why I bring it up, because if anybody knows, it's everybody but me, but especially you, David.
Well, that's kind of you to say. It's with great shame I know these details about Doctor Who costumes. But that's a linen coat that was custom designed and is going to drive me crackers buying one of those, because when you get it, do you distress it or do you not? But that's the coat that he wears when he goes to pick up Missy's body from the execution planet. So it's actually, and I think it's still, even in that episode, it still has that worn look to it. It's almost to me like a Wild West look. But that's his morning suit. That's the outfit that he used to persuade the people on the executioner's planet that he was going there to collect a body. So that's what's going on there. He's wearing it now, I don't know, but it's a great outfit. Like, I've got massive coat envy over that thing, I've got to tell you.
Save up some more money, David.
Yeah, I know. I just here we go. I need to upload a couple of cosplay pictures. It's always fun to do that, and I'd love to see the listeners. If anyone out there cosplays any of the Doctor Who's, be it for Halloween or creepily with the same creepy level of obsession that I do, love to see it. I need to put up my Pete Davidson coat that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and maybe one or two of me is 10. So.
Okay, so if you haven't already joined our Facebook group, the Don't Blink Doctor Who GSM Facebook group, go ahead and join that, because if I can get those pictures from you, David, we'll make sure that they appear in the group.
Yeah, and Doctor Who fans, I think, are a pretty creative group, so I know that people out there are doing the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. I want to see it all.
So this was one of those keystone scenes where... What did you think? Were you persuaded by Capaldi when he said that he had joined the monks, or did you think that it was a ploy?
I wasn't sure what it was, what his long con game actually was, but I knew that he hadn't joined the space monks and was working for them. At the same time, I did not think that it was this kind of ploy to kind of trick Bill with Nardal's help as well, in order to get Bill there to what was the end result, but break the vision, or what was it that exactly happened when Bill figured it out, grabbed the gun and shot the Doctor with blanks?
Well, okay. I can answer that, but I also have a question that I can't answer that I want to put out to the listeners. He was basically just vetting her. He was making sure that she really wasn't programmed and that she had a complete freedom from their control, because he didn't want to risk bringing her in if she was being influenced by them.
Oh, that's right.
So,
okay.
So all it was. But here's my question. And Nardole mentioned about being out for 6 weeks. Where was the TARDIS?
Don't know. Listeners, let us know.
Yeah, I wonder, which goes back again to Last of the Time Lords, when the Doctor is without his TARDIS, and there's something very unsettling about that, you know, you're so used to him having it. We can also assume, I think, that the vault is bigger on the inside.
Yes, that was my first thought when we finally get to see Missy. She's there at the piano. We even get to hear her play a little bit of the theme song from the movie The Sting. I'm not exactly sure why, but that was great to hear. And yeah, it was very spacious in there.
Yeah, it reminded me of one of my favorite TV shows of all time, which is Hannibal.
Okay.
And the aesthetic of the vault looked a lot like the... It was the same setup. It's very, very similar. You've got an extraordinarily dangerous person, physically dangerous person, behind glass or force field, but they're also incredibly manipulative intellectually, and that almost makes them more threatening because you're constantly waiting for the shoe to drop. And of course, Missy in this incarnation, the Master in this incarnation, is kind of lecturish. I mean, she's very sophisticated and elegant, if you've not seen Hannibal, and you've got a strong stomach, I recommend that TV show. It's one of the most extraordinary things. Get the Blu-ray. It's just a beautiful TV show. He, of course, would sit playing the piano as well. They played a Goldberg variation and things like that. And I just thought that she was so great in this. I've done a complete 180. I was a massive John Sim fan and was grumpy that we had Michelle Gomez instead. And now I'm like, don't leave. I don't want her to leave. She's so beguiling, and her acting was next level, I think, in this episode.
Yeah, she did so many great things that were just subtle little mouth noises or throat noises while the Doctor was explaining things and she was having her discussion with Bill. And yeah, top notch. But I do have a question. Does anybody have any ideas on what Missy plans to do if she actually gets these requested items, the boots, some toys like a particle accelerator, a 3D printer, and a pony? What is she going to do with those? Or is she just making things difficult on the Doctor?
I think it's one of those things that she's done before. One of these is a lie. She doesn't really want one of them, but which is it?
Yeah, I could see her with the pony, the particle accelerator. That's obvious. And she always needs new boots. So I just thought that was fun. She was throwing those out. She's wonderful.
Well, Lecter does the same thing. Now I think about it, Hannibal does the exact same thing. He, when Will Graham comes to him for help, or when Clarice comes to him, he wants luxuries in return. Yeah, I'll help you, but I need a fine meal cooked in front of the prison cell that I'm in, or I need a room with a view, whatever it would be.
I think it's just one of those things where she's asking for them. But if she does get them and we get a little call out later on in this season, I'm all for it.
Oh, wouldn't that be funny if you just see her walk, like riding behind shot on a pony? But it comes back to the meat of it, which is that, is she genuinely trying to be a good person? Is it just a huge scam? Which is the mirror. She's always the mirror in many ways of the Doctor, who, of course, earlier on, just a few scenes earlier, we were trying to figure out, well, is he actually evil? Now we're trying to figure out, is Missy actually good? And she plays it with perfect ambiguity, as Capaldi does when he's pretending to be under control of the monks. But I wonder, I mean, it is such a beautiful thing because you really, to me at this point, I'm so enchanted with her that I really want her to be good. But I suspect I'm going to get Charlie Brown with that, and Lucy will move the football.
I think the odds are 80% to 20 that's what's going to happen. It's going to be fun to watch to see how it happens. Now, as far as watching, okay, we got to bring this up. The great Doctor fake out, the fake regeneration. What? Have any of the previous Doctors faked out the audience in this fashion before?
Absolutely not. No. And he, underneath that beautiful coat, he probably was wearing a t-shirt that just said, "We're doing this for the trailer." Because they used a clip of that in the, you know, the season unveiling trailer, and it was never explained exactly how he did that. Like, what? Everything else made sense, but how did he? Like, did he have like flashlights up his sleeves? I don't know. It didn't make any sense at all.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about the mechanics of it. I just know that, you know, Capaldi's doctor, he's kind of fashioned himself a bit after a magician, right?
Yes, he has. Yeah. And that would be a classic magician's trick. I would struggle myself, I think, to replicate it. He talks about misdirection a lot. And that, of course, is all part of that character, which right down to the fake regeneration and the whole scene, it is all about misdirection. Look where the arrow is trying to direct you away from rather than where it's pointing. But no, we've never had a fake out regeneration before. Other than maybe when David Tennant, of course, almost regenerated and kind of spilled the energy off into his spare hand. But that's very different. So kind of a weird moment. But it was interesting because it actually unsettled me. And I was thinking, there was that moment where you thought, well, what if he actually is regenerating?
Right. It's possible.
And I realized I got thinking about all the other times in the new show I've watched the regeneration scenes. And because it's such a big TV moment, I've always done it with friends and family. Loved ones. I've always sat down and we've made a moment of it. I remember watching when Eccleston regenerated and that being torn two ways feeling where it's so sad you've lost the doctor, but now there's this great new guy. And then when Tennant went, I had a big party with lots of friends and everyone there. And I just remember a couple of friends, one girl was there, my friend Kate, who was so upset. So when I see Tennant regenerating, I actually think of like hot tears on my shoulder because she was so upset by it. And we all were. It was a wonderful, magic moment. And when I thought for a second, oh, I'm just sat watching this on my own on the couch. What if he actually does regenerate? It was an interesting moment, and it made me realize how important those changeovers are, and that got me thinking about the bigger importance of TV, and it's not always just about the show, it's about those moments in your life, too, which is why I love Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm sure that he doesn't dare to do it again, because then once he does actually regenerate, Bill's not going to buy it, so you have to use these kind of tricks sparingly. And how about Bill using those enhanced memories of her mom to help counteract the fake memories of the monks? Now, of course, on the surface, this doesn't really make sense, but who cares? It, like you said, it is a TV show, and it was great to see her mom play such a pivotal role in saving the world.
Yeah, that's where I started to switch off a bit, I think. It would have been nicer to have seen more of the doctor's involvement in that and setting up all of the photographs and so on. And I get what they were trying to do, but, I also actually genuinely thought they might kill Bill when she's doing the mind transference. I thought, oh, they're really going to do it. But then when the mum came in, I don't know, maybe that's, yeah, if they'd have killed her, that would have given it a 9 in my estimation, but it did feel a little bit safe.
And it might've even moved me up to a 9.5. Who knows?
Yeah,
it was definitely strange. It was nice. It was strange. A lot of things don't make sense. But in the end, the pyramid blasts off into space. Could it be going to Mars?
Ooh, I wonder. I wonder. It was a funny image in a good way that they just booked it out of there in a pyramid. It was almost brilliantly comic that they ran away in this big spaceship.
Like,
should not be able to fly. Like, as you do. Yeah. Quick, everyone.
Quick to the pyramid. Yes. Oh, you know, Doctor Who knows that it can get away with just some ridiculous things sometimes that other science fiction shows wouldn't dare to have a flying pyramid take off out of London. But
exactly.
And in fact, right after the episode, I posted the weekly Twitter poll at Doctor Who GSM. You know, what are your memories, real or fake, of this week's Doctor Who, The Lie of the Land? And 38% of the people voted that their main memory was loving Missy and her crazy demands, but another 38% loved or maybe they didn't love it, but they remember the doctor's fake regeneration, and 24% remember mom memories saving the world.
Yeah, we also got some feedback. Again, there was a very interesting conversation about this, which maybe we can dip into. Monica sent us this note. She said, hello, guys. I'm still not sure how I feel about these episodes because they were fun, but they were also set up. So far, the Doctor hasn't really had to fight the monks, but I do not think this is all a simulation. Funny that one of the listeners mentioned Wonder Woman. In the latest run of the comic book, Wonder Woman finds out that she has been in a computer simulation for years and everything in her life is a lie, or something to that effect. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks, Monica. Yeah, and that's interesting. The Doctor has almost no interaction with the monks in this episode. In fact, I'm not even sure that they... Do they speak other than in the sort of... I don't know.
That's a good point, other than in their little dystopian promotional video at the very beginning of the episode, because I really wanted to focus, like you talked about before, I wanted to focus on their mouth movements to see if they're as off as, you know, maybe some of the early Cybermen were. But you're right. I don't think we heard them talk very much. And it was strange that there wasn't very much interaction with the Doctor, considering he was supposedly working for them.
I wonder if they won't come back. I don't know. It feels like a very Moffat-y thing to do, to have the season finale. But I don't know. But again, it was a very eerie idea when they realize that they're not everywhere. And I kind of like that. So that worked for me. But
yeah, we also had a lot more listener feedback in our Don't Blink Doctor Who GSM Facebook group. Doug Payton gave this episode 10 out of 10 benevolent monks. Oh, okay, now that the truth transmission has been turned off, he's now down to 7 out of 10 braided bills. Says it's a solid episode, but seemed a little too easy getting both the Doctor and into the pyramid. What was the purpose of the false regeneration? Dramatics? Once Bill took shots at the Doctor, that's all he needed to confirm that Bill wasn't in control of the monks? When Tennant did the partial regeneration, like you talked about, David, it was at least because he'd suffered a hit by the Dalek. They risk returning the regeneration into a gimmick. And of course, it gave them a scene to tease earlier in the season. Oh, you caught that as well, David. It's regeneration, Mr. Moffat, not just a fireworks show.
Yeah. Oh, there was a great theory, incidentally, that I read that... when the earlier doctors would regenerate, it was sort of slightly different every time. But now, when the doctor regenerates, it is a big explosion and the TARDIS set gets wrecked or whatever. And someone had come up with the idea that during the Time War, the Time Lords had weaponized regeneration. So the idea was that if you kill a Time Lord and you're too near him, you're going to get yourself hurt when he changes. Mm. It's a self-defense mechanism, which I thought was lovely. When I talk about Doctor Who fans being creative, that's the stuff. Like, I'm like, that's a really good idea, and they should actually bring that into the show.
I think that would be great to bring back because, you know, it would make it more of a solitary thing for the Doctor to go through as well, because people know that it's too dangerous, or we're going to see somebody too close to him that gets fried in the process. Neil Ottenstein says, so we finally get the regen scene from the season trailer. It was also good to see the photos of Bill's mother actually paying dividends. Right on, Neil. You caught that. And yeah, they had to tie that back in somehow.
Well, yeah. I didn't actually expect it, but it was a nice... And I wasn't quite sure exactly what the mechanics were supposed to be. But I thought it was lovely that the mental image of her mother that she had was of a woman that was sort of roughly her age, because that's, you know, because she passed so young. I thought that was really cool. And obviously, like, rocking a sort of like early, like 70s, early 80s look, which I thought was terrific too. God bless Bill's mum. Well, we also heard from Trevor Hedden. He said, I thought the episode was okay. A good long bit with Missy, a bit of action here and there, good dialogue with Nardole. But as for the question about the story arc wrapping up, well, it's not done. The non-regeneration had two problems to it. One, it got stopped way too suddenly and too cleanly. The closest past fake regeneration was the Stolen Earth. And for that one, Tennant's first regeneration trailed off and left the Doctor tired for a moment. That's true. Two, all of the characters shared a similar mood once the fake regeneration was finished. They all clapped and smiled together. The Doctor, Nardole, and about 8 armed soldiers. Very synchronized and artificially sweet. I give this 6 comic book level writings out of 10 tins.
Interesting. I love the photo that Trevor included with the comment, though I don't understand it other than it's blue. So it reminds me of Doctor Who, and it's the Tintin shop. Does that ring any bells with you?
No, I actually need that explained to me. I don't know.
It looks like a TARDIS store called the Tintin shop.
It does. I wonder if that was on the filming location, because I was trying to figure out where some of those streets were. If they were probably in Cardiff, but some of them look very much like streets I used to know in London. So it might be one of those. You can do amazing walking tours of Cardiff.
I want to.
And then go up to Port Marion, where they film The Prisoner, which is another great show.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are some locations in London, but the Cardiff ones are so close together. It's so surreal. Here's the Torchwood hub, you know, here's X and Y. So now we heard from Mark DeCotes, who gave this episode 5 out of 10 live rounds that were not switched for blanks. Mark's problems with this episode were these. 1, we saw clips of Daleks and Cybermen in the revised history The Monks Implanted. Are those clips the same from this season's trailer? If so, does that mean we're not getting an episode with either classic villain? 2, the monks were pretty stupid. If they know the only way to defeat them is through Bill, why the heck did they let it walk around free? You would think that they would keep her locked up, safe and sound, and force her to procreate, crikey, in order to continue their dominance of Earth. 3, and these are all good points, as soon as Missy said the key was the psychic link between the pin, Bill, and the monk's machine, and all I had to do was break it, my first thought was, great, you have a TARDIS. Simply take Bill into the past, or far into the future, or disappear to the other end of the universe. Moving her should break the link and end the threat. I'm disappointed they didn't cover this. 4, what the heck did Bill's mom have to do with anything? Yes, I agree. I didn't get that bit at all. How did broadcasting a memory of her mom to the world protect the bond and free everyone? For that matter, how did thinking about her mom protect Bill when even the doctor couldn't do it? The more I type, the more... you're selling me. The more I type, the more I'm wondering if 5 out of 10 was a bit too generous. And what was with the cassette players? Did they really take the time for Bill to record her speech and then copy it into multiple cassettes for everyone? Not to mention how hard it is to find cassettes, cassette recorders, and portable cassette players these days. Did they explain that they needed to find something analog? If so, I missed it. I can't disagree with a single thing that said there.
No, Mark DeCote, you are on fire. I didn't even catch any of that.
Did you? Well, no, the one I did think was, why just get it right, put Bill in the TARDIS and fly her out to... you know, wherever. Give her a nice sort of holiday in wherever that diamond planet was. They sent Catherine Tate in Midnight. And the monks would know who created the link because they directly asked her. So, right, you would put her in a prison and keep her there. And terrifyingly force her to procreate. And also the bloodline thing as well didn't make a huge amount of sense to
no,
me.
No, that was kind of strange. I'll admit that right up.
I mean, the cassette player thing I was sort of okay with. I liked the idea that it was kind of like the crabs in the Christmas episode where you had to distract yourself in order to be safe, which is a really terrifying idea. Like when you're told not to think about something, there is no other way to make someone think about something more than doing that.
Perhaps they needed it to be on analog cassettes to avoid being traced digitally, like if the monks had the technology to track down any MP3s or WAV files that might be sent digitally. I'm not sure. I'm just trying to cover for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it had a nice aesthetic to it because it does. It's that thing of regression. And to illustrate what I mean, there's a scene in. You have to really look carefully for this. You have to know it's there. But there's a scene in the Last of the Time Lords when Martha goes into a house to tell everyone about the doctor, and everyone's wearing rags. And there's a flight of stairs, and there's a woman on the stairs, and she's reading a book, and she's crying. And if you look really carefully, she's crying because she's reading a cookbook. And it was just the nicest detail that I'm like, because obviously the idea in that horrible alternate reality that you would have all of those wonderful ingredients available and not take it for, you know, not appreciate it is so upsetting for her because I'm sure they're living on gruel or something like that. And so I like the idea that, like, even in 6 months or whatever it is, that, like, things have just regressed to the point where you can't get your hands on digital things, that you're already going back to cassette recorders. I think there's something quite beguiling about that.
Interesting. To Mark's first point, I do think we are still going to see the Daleks and the classic Cybermen. I think that's something that's kind of unrelated to the monks. At least I hope it's unrelated to the monks. I'm not sure if Missy's going to bring them in or how it's going to happen, but I think we are still going to see a big deal of those original villains.
I wonder, again, it did feel like, I don't think that they made this episode for the trailer, right? I don't think that they sat there and said, we need a regeneration in the trailer, we need the Daleks, and we need the Cybermen. But unfortunately, they whoever did the preview, I think, did cut a bunch of stuff in here to take advantage of that. And it is a little bit misleading. It's sort of like how Rogue One, they didn't, half of the trailer wasn't in the movie. And exactly. That was nothing to do, you know, literally, I mean, half of it was not in the thing where she faces off with the TIE fighter. And I, what they said was, the director said, this was an overzealous marketing person. And I think probably someone that made the trailer for this series, 10 of Doctor Who, was like, oh, great, we'll put a Dalek in. I don't know if the Daleks will be coming back. I think perhaps not even. I don't know. The Cybermen, I know for sure, will be later on, which gets to a certain type of homework in a minute. But, yeah.
Interesting how the marketing teams do those things. Jeff Gentry posted the Doctor's to-do list. 1, get rid of racism. And 2, get rid of people who talk in cinemas. I'm all for that, Doctor. And in amongst 7 billion people is someone like you, and that's why I put up with the rest. So Jeff gives it 7.5 out of 10 false regenerations. And oh, an off-episode comment. I watched all of the spinoff show Class. I enjoyed it, and boy, did it leave with a huge cliffhanger.
Thank you. Yes. Jeff, you are absolutely correct. Class was brilliant. I no one else liked it. It got one series. I loved it. And it was part of the whole young adult genre, which I know nothing about, but I assumed was for 12-year-olds. But it was so full of gore and weird things. It was like Torchwood. It felt like
the
world is changing. Yeah.
Jeff posted a photo, I guess it's from the final episode, and it looked like a weeping angel made an appearance.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Great show. Miss it. So Trevor Hedden and Jeff Gentry both pointed out that Bill was channeling Martha Jones. Jeff said companion fighting while a doctor is absent, standing up for the values while a doctor cannot help. And Trevor said more specifically, it's Last of the Time Lords, but the companion does less. I'm fine with that. I think that Bill is a lot more vulnerable than Martha. And it was interesting to see that dynamic, but then have her for a moment be disappointed at the end.
That's going to be very, very interesting indeed. Yeah, it was unusual to see her and Nardal, even though they're getting along for the most part great and they're becoming a team. They did have a little bit of a disagreement, and that's understandable.
Yes, indeed.
I'll just leave it at that.
Now, so last week we did, for Doctor Who homework, we did Pyramids of Mars.
True.
I am curious to see what you thought about that, because to me it was such an iconic episode. Was that one that clicked with you?
Yes, for the most part. I haven't watched the final two parts. Is it a 5-parter? I think I've seen 3 of 5. Or
it's 4. It's 4, yeah. Oh,
okay, I am just a little bit into the second to the last episode. And I enjoy it, and I could see where this could be redone if they ever went that route and redid it with the modern Doctor Who, the aesthetics, the acting, and all of that. Tom Baker, you're right. The way you described him before, with him being at his wide-eyed best, yeah, he's definitely wide-eyed through almost the entire thing. And I love the concept, and I thought it was kind of strange that there's these creatures from the pyramid, or the aliens, that were kind of like zombies, but they were just giant slabs of something. I don't know how you would describe it any better than that, but I could definitely see the potential in remaking this into a story or making a sequel to it.
Yeah, and it's the a really good thing to pick up on, because the villain Sutekh, the destroyer.
That's them, Sutekh.
Yeah, Sutekh. He's the one sort of really powerful sort of monster that they never brought back. And the guy that did the voice is a guy called Gabriel Wolf, who's got an incredibly spooky, calm voice.
Yes.
And he's still very much alive, to my the best of my knowledge. And so he did the voice in the Satan Pit. One day they'll bring him back, and I think it will be really incredible to see. So, and I would add, by the way, when we do these classic Doctor Who homeworks, it's a flavor. We want to recommend episodes and stories that we think are the good ones, of which there are many, so you can avoid the bad ones, of which there are maybe a few. And but don't feel like anyone has to sit through the entire run of it. Just dip in, see what it used to be like, and the ones that you really love, finish them off for sure.
Oh, okay. And I appreciate you saying that, because I've felt a little daunted on some of the four-parters, only because there's so much else going on between the, you know, the new Doctor Who series. And then, of course, there was the big 12 Monkeys episodes. I had to get through all 10 episodes of those, which are also brilliant. Oh, my goodness. And then, you know, the leftovers finished up. And so there's been so much TV just backing up the whole system. But now everything is cleared out except for classic Doctor Who and new Doctor Who. So what's our next homework? I should be able to watch all of it in plenty of time.
Yeah. So, this one is not, I think, on BritBox. So I feel bad recommending something that's not on that service. But it's a really great episode. I think it's, you might be able to get it on a site like YouTube. Not that I said it's on there, or Dailymotion. You can also buy the DVD, which I highly recommend. And I'm recommending this for no reason whatsoever.
awesome.
But it's called The Tenth Planet. And it features the very original classic Cybermen, who are creepy as all get out, and done on almost no money whatsoever. But it's a brilliant story. It's William Hartnell's last story. So it's the first time you see a regeneration. And it's set in the Antarctic. First time we've met the Cybermen, and I think everyone needs to see this to set them up for maybe what's going to happen later in this season. So have a look at that. Now, the last episode is actually missing, but there are ways around that. The DVD has an animation. They actually beautifully animated the recording of the audio that we still have, because Doctor Who fans are massive nerds, and so people used to record the TV set.
In the 60s?
Even in the 60s, yeah. And and now the nerds grew up and are genius sound engineers. So they've actually done really cool stereo remixes of people holding a cassette recorder up to a television set.
I love it.
So they took that, they animated it. They also used to take photographs. The BBC would take photographs of the TV set when episodes were being broadcast. They're called telesnaps. We have those too. So there are reconstructions that people have put together of the last episode. So if you can watch this, it might be, the animation even might be online. 10th Planet, it's scary, it's wonderful, it feels really modern even though it's 66. And I think if you watch it, you will see a line from William Hartnell that John Hurt says in Day of the Doctor that will make a lot of people smile. So I do hope everyone at least watches an episode, and I can't wait to hear what people think about it, because it's very, very different.
Awesome. The 10th Planet. I'm going to try to search that out. Do you have any guesses as to why this one would not be on BritBox? I know there was another one that was in the catalog at BritBox, but it said it was not available. I think it was called The Five Doctors. Why wouldn't, if it's available, why wouldn't it be there?
Great question. And it's because of the animation. It's because of the fact that the last episode is not in existence. Well, it might be out there somewhere, but we don't know where it is. So, I think there were rights issues with the animated version, so that was why it was not uploaded. Although I think it will be at some point. But
how about the Five Doctors? It seemed like a more recent episode that somebody would have, but maybe there's just some sort of weird licensing agreement.
Yeah, that I don't know. That I don't know. I think, well, okay, so, all right, here we go. That was actually, again, I'm ashamed I know this, that was co-funded with an Australian TV company when they made it. They stumped up some money. So that actually could be it, because it was a co-production.
Mm. Might have to see if there's such a thing as Aussie Box.
Aussie Box, yeah. I'd love to watch that. That would be great. Well, The Five Doctors is one of the, I mean, it's so lightweight, but it is great to watch all of the old Doctors together. Tom declined to be in it, so they used some clips of an episode they never showed of him, and the first Doctor at that point, unfortunately, had passed away, so they have to get a bloke that looks like him. But
oh no, okay.
But it's a lot of fun, and it's not the most heavy duty script they ever wrote, but
okay. Well, first things first, I'll look for the 10th Planet. In yeah. any fashion I can find it.
Exactly.
That's good stuff, David. Thank you for all these homework assignments. And yes, Pyramids of Mars, I'm going to see if I can get the last 1.5 episodes done. Dig into the 10th Planet, find it somewhere, somehow. But with that, we want to thank you again for listening to Don't Blink. And this week's call to action, if you're enjoying Don't Blink, please, and of course you're enjoying it, why wouldn't you make it this far into the episode if you weren't? Take a minute or two to leave us a review in the Apple Podcasts app or in iTunes on your desktop. Either way, if you have some kind words and want to leave us, who knows, maybe a 5-star rating, we'd greatly appreciate it. Details on subscribing are at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your feedback. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, yes. And just tell them. And until next week, remember, don't blink. Don't even blink.
Thanks for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I am the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission by Silver Screen Records. They're composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.